Right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Don't Fuck It Up. This week, we have a very, very special guest. She is our first Drag Race UK queen. It is Miss Vinegar Strokes. How are you?
Hello! How are you? I'm good.
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us this week. And like I say, as to the listeners, you are our first UK queen on the show.
The best one, everyone's favourite, the heart of the season. I think it's the unconfirmed Miss Congeniality. I'm also self-dubbing that's probably not true, but you know, if everyone's gonna win it, come on, it's gonna be old Vinny Strokes who's gonna win Miss Congeniality.
Like he says, you were the self-contained heart of the season, and no one can take that from you.
I think I self-proclaimed everything that, like, apart from Hodgepodge, I think I self-proclaimed everything. Slag, the heart of the season, Miss Congeniality, you know, hair queen, makeup queen of the season, all that. So, yeah, all very much self-proclaimed.
Well, at least you took Hodgepodge a ram of that, and you've been able to take out in your own stride.
Thank God RuPaul gave, because, you know, a lot of the time when RuPaul was talking to all these queens, a lot of the time, you know, RuPaul is giving these people a gift. And if you're not open to accept that gift, then you're not going to see it. And, you know, and obviously some of it can be made out, you know, Hodgepodge was made out to be like, oh my God, that's the worst thing you can call someone. Because like, I was like, obviously on the show when he says it, I'm like, okay, my brain was like, okay, turn it into something positive. Hodgepodge Couture, and I had a t-shirt somewhere, I think it's not now in the wash, but like, I've got my t-shirts and bands and that kind of stuff, so
that's exactly
it's now become my little thing that I run with, and it's so funny because, you know, you look to that like a year ago, because that obviously happened a year ago, I'm like, oh my God, my drag has completely changed since then. So,
so
some people are like, she's not, you know, Hodgepodge anymore. But I'm like, Hodgepodge is now very much part of my heart.
It's ingrained.
Oh, it's great. It's ingrained. I'm like a stick of rock, like cut me in half, and it's just Hodgepodge inside, which is great.
At the end of the day, you've been able to turn it into a part of your business. And like you said, make merch from it. And I think it's smart to take little nuggets like that to use in your own career and in your merchandise and stuff. So bravo to you for being able
to take that. Thank you.
So I wanted to start with your early drag career. Obviously, you had a career a long time before Drag Race was a thing in the UK. So I wanted to touch on how you got started. Like, was it a whim? A lot of people do drag, obviously, for Halloween, and then kind of it grows from there. But what was your story? How did you start?
So I started doing drag. So March this year is my fifth birthday. So happy birthday to me. Yay. So that was when I officially was like, I'm going to start doing this, I think. Like that was the kind of month I said, yeah, let's just do it and see what happens from it. But I am one of those queens who started on Halloween. I started on Halloween 2014. And it was just kind of a whim because I was doing stand-up comedy before that, because literally I was doing my acting and then I wanted to do some more kind of creative stuff on my own and kind of explore that side of the business and that side of like, my kind of talents, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And what else can I do? So I was doing stand-up and I got offered a gig on Halloween by a friend of mine who ran a bar in East London. He said, look, can you come and do just some like jokes and some stand-up but come as a witch? And I was like, well, absolutely not, that's ridiculous, I'm not gonna come in drag to a gig, are you mental? And he was like, I'll pay you 70 quid, what do you think? And I was like, what time do you need me? So essentially, because that was my first like paid stand-up, I was like, I'll do whatever you want, of course I will. My friend's brother also was starting drag at the same time, and he was quite good at like doing a cut crease and doing a wig, so he kind of helped me get into drag for the first time. So my first time in drag, I looked okay because, like, you know, I had people kind of helping me do bits and pieces. Obviously, looking back, I'm like, oh, dog rough, but for a first go, not bad. Completely awful. And so it all kind of like snowballed from there, really. And I kind of did the gig and I was like, oh, this really fits into what I've been trying to, because I always felt there was something missing with my stand-up, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was. I was like, oh, this kind of thing where I can do actual singing as well, and like musical theatre and stuff like that, and comedy and characters, which is all stuff I've always loved growing up as a kind of theatre kid. And I was like, oh, I can actually do that in one, in kind of one body, in one thing. I just see the wig and some makeup to kind of make that make sense. So I kind of was like, okay, we'll try and see what happens. I think I went out twice in that, because I was like, oh, I quite enjoyed just not going out anyway. So I went to like Sink the Pink and that kind of stuff in East London. And I was like, okay, cool. Maybe this is the thing I'm going to do. And so after that, I made the choice to kind of just pursue it and see what happens. I mean, I wasn't getting much, like many auditions and that kind of stuff. So I was like, I might as well just do this as a thing and see what happens. So I ended up going, okay, how can I get a gig? Like, I don't know where to go to get a gig. I don't know the scene at all. I don't know. I know a couple of guys who do drag, but I don't know how you get a gig or even where you would start. So I was like, okay, I will just set up my own show. So I basically produced from scratch. I'd never produced a show before. I had no idea what I was doing, but I just did it with a friend of mine. And we just basically produced this whole kind of variety show. We got circus people in, singers, dancers, all these like a mishmash of people. Again, a very hodgepodge show, essentially, of like just random people who wanted to have like a platform to do something and show off what they do. And I was like, okay, I'm providing it, let's do it. And I hosted the show. I'd never hosted a show before. I literally done so many things that I'd never done before in this one show. And it was on like this big old canal boat barge in Vauxhall. And I was like, okay, cool, we're doing this. And we put the show, we sold out the show. I looked like a dog's dinner. And it was all like circus themes. I was like dressed like a ringmaster with a face like a melted candle. And we did the show. It sold out. It was amazing. So from there, I kind of got the gist of, oh, this is how I can kind of make money out of this and make a kind of not even a living at that point, but like just like a side hustle while I'm kind of doing my acting. So drag was always like a side thing for me. And and it kind of just all kind of went from there, really. And it's kind of snowballed into where it is now, which is like, oh, four years later, I'm now on RuPaul's Drag Race, and I'm now doing other bits and pieces involving drag, and it's been a gradual kind of snowball effect, but it's been a really good run.
Yeah. How many years into your drag career would you say it became your full-time job?
It's weird because I was still doing acting jobs as I was doing drag. I kind of picked up the musical theatre jobs and the plays and that kind of stuff. So I was still doing bits, and slowly but surely a lot of the roles I was getting slowly went from being boy roles into doing roles that were drag orientated. So I always I was now kind of introducing drag into my theatre world, because that's what people were kind of knowing me for. And a lot of shows at that point were kind of introducing drag or gender bending or something kind of queer orientated in these plays or musicals. So I kind of always started getting those. So I suppose it got serious after, say, maybe a couple of years, and I was like, oh, okay, cool, I'm doing this is the thing I'm doing, this kind of thing I'm being known for. But I suppose 100%, like, this is where we're going now. It's definitely like after, say, two or three years, I was like, okay, cool, this is what we're doing.
How did you come up with your name? Like, once you had created that character, and did it just come naturally?
So the story goes, the first time I actually got into makeup, a friend of mine kind of helped me do bits and pieces, and kind of did like these random like thin pencil eyebrows, and I looked obviously a massive state. But I sent the pictures to another friend of mine, and I was like, okay, cool, tell me honestly what you think. And his first response back was, all right, vinegar tits. And I was like, vinegar, that's a cool name, because I never wanted a name like Claire or Gemma. Do you know what I mean? I wanted like a really kind of like more like a title or a brand or something quite quirky like that. And I was like, vinegar, that's quite fun. I love to eat, I love food, I love cooking as well. Vinegar's quite, can be quite sharp, it can be quite sweet, bittersweet. Do you know what I mean? So there's so many like connotations of what vinegar can actually be. So I was like, okay, cool, vinegar sounds cool, but tits is not a good surname, you know. No way. So I was kind of looking around, and a friend of mine was like, have you heard of a vinegar stroke? And I was like, what is that? And he told me the meaning of it. I went, that's the name, that's legit the name. So I found the name quite quickly, and I only kind of settled on it because the name, because the meaning of what the phrase actually means, just made me laugh. And I was like, that's cool. And what's nice about it is, if you know what it means, you laugh. If you don't know what it means, it's just like, it's just the name. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. As you said, you had been on stage. Obviously, you've been an actor for most of your career before drag. And you started working with like the likes of Bianca Del Rio and Michelle Visage.
Yeah.
How was that, working with someone at that kind of level? Obviously, if you had been doing drag and then you see Bianca Del Rio, who is the winner of season 6, and Michelle, who is the judge on the show, was it intimidating working with someone like that?
Not necessarily. I mean, I've met Bianca randomly at a bar in Camden, and she I mean, this is the thing, like, you'll be surprised of how many people actually do know each other, whether it's in the UK and America. It's always like, oh yeah, I know that person, even before Drag Race or whatever. So so my friend who owns the bar knew Bianca. When Bianca was over doing her tours, she would always have her like after show parties at the particular bar. So I met her randomly. I was like, I fully fangirled. I was like, hi Bianca, I'm a big fan. She's like, you got great taste. She says that to everybody as well. You got great taste. So she said it to you. You could be like, okay, she said that to every single person who said, so I love you. So she said that to me, and I was like, oh my god, amazing, I've got great taste, amazing. And then I found out that she was coming into everybody's talking about Jamie, literally on the day that I got eliminated. So I got eliminated, and then I was going back to work, and I think the day that I returned, she was starting her first day of rehearsals. So I was like, oh my god, this is mental, quite triggering, because I was like, I don't want to, I can't talk about it, and I don't want to talk about it, because I'm just like, you know, because you leave and you're like, I think I've just made an ass of myself. Yeah. I'm gonna jump out of a window. Do you know what I mean? Like, like you come out feeling quite low when you do. So the last thing I wanted was to be like, oh, okay, I'm with the best winner, the best drag queen out of the lot. I'm now working with this person, which is exciting because I'm a fan of the person. But also, I was like, I don't really want to talk about anything. And luckily, when I got back, there was no questions asked and that kind of stuff. Well, from Bianca anyway, because obviously she knows the protocol. But
yeah,
it was just like, it was just crazy. And so it wasn't really intimidating to work with her. It was just kind of like more exciting. Michelle, I fully was like, I'm intimidated by Michelle Visage. And because, you know, and I think it's the same, like, you see people on TV, like, you know, even like Simon Cowell and like all these people, you think, oh my god, they're so intimidated, when actually their persona on the judging panel is that, but outside of that, they're not that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it was just, so for me, it was just great to kind of get to know Michelle on a one-to-one level, as like a colleague, as like a level colleague, as opposed to, I am the inferior drag queen, and you are the inferior person who is judging me. And a lot of people ask, oh, was she judging everybody? It's like, no, she wasn't. She was literally there, you know. She didn't care about if we what wigs we're wearing. She doesn't care. Like, she's part. It's all part of the show. It's not my drag. Yeah. It's the show's drag. Do you know what I mean? But it was just great to work with them, and not only them, like, you know, Shane Ritchie and Rita Simons, Faye Tozer from Steps, like all these amazing people who had such amazing careers in entertainment. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was more like a learning curve of what can I learn. To help my career succeed, as opposed to, oh my god, I'm fangirling at this person. So,
and how long did you do Everybody's Talking About Jamie?
I did it for 2 years. Yeah, so wow. So I joined the West End transfer back in October. We started rehearsals in October 2017. We opened November time, and I was there for 2 years. So I literally went off, did that. Then I had to like fake going on holiday, fake injury. Like that was a whole mess trying to sort out me getting off the show. Even though like the producers knew and whatnot, it was a full mess. So I went off and did the filming for a couple of weeks, came back, and then I had the choice to leave in September because they were changing over the contracts. But I decided to stay on until the January just gone, so January 4th this year. So I thought, oh, actually, how often do you get to be on TV and be on the West End at the same time?
Yeah.
Probably not that often. So I was like, I'm going to take that opportunity and see how that goes, which was stress, but it was amazing. So yeah, it was an amazing experience in life to kind of have, you know, simultaneously TV and West End at the same time.
Coming from like auditioning for West End shows and movies and TV and stuff like that, how did your audition for Drag Race compare to things like that?
It was easier in terms of you kind of, it's all things that you kind of do anyway, like, you know, talking, I do it all the time to people, and I think I'm quite a good talker. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I can, you know, even though it's weird to kind of talk to a camera, but there's no one kind of answering these questions. You're trying to be like, I'm energized, and I'm going to answer this question about why I love drag, my favorite pizza topping, all this kind of all this crap. But yeah, so it's all that kind of stuff. The looks and the lip sync. Do you know what I found? I found the video a really good excuse just to be creative with it, because I was 125% sure I wasn't getting on the show. I just thought, oh, I'll chuck my name in the mix so they know who I am, but I know for a fact that I'm not getting on the show. I know. So I just thought, okay, cool, we'll just have a really, really fun time with the tape and kind of just make it as creative as possible. So I did all this kind of like on location, like around Soho, around London, with my looks, giving it, hi, I'm at a market, but I'm wearing this really kind of amazing couture jumpsuit, this kind of stuff. My lip sync was probably my favorite bit, because it was all kind of like I had all these tears down my face and a big ball gown and lip syncing to one of RuPaul's songs, which I thought was quite sick. Rollers in the hair and that kind of stuff. And then obviously Snatch Game as well. So yeah, I just found it a really good chance to be creative. It was just a lot of like work to put in, because at the time I was still doing Jamie as well, and it was over Christmas as well, so I had like zero time. So I'm even on like Boxing Day I was in drag doing stuff for it. So yeah, it was a lot of work, but I really enjoyed doing that actually.
So from you sent in that audition tape, what was your process like from sending that in to getting the call that you're on the show?
So basically, send it in, you hear nothing for ages, and then you start getting like the odd email from them saying, hi, thanks for your video, da da da. And then as you kind of go through, well, as your video kind of goes through the process, and if they like you, they'll put you in the next rounds and that kind of stuff, you'll get an update of where you're at in terms of where you're placing and that kind of stuff. I always got the odd phone call saying, hi, just so you know, you're now in this round. You're now part of the top 100, whatever. So, yep, great. And then as it kind of whittles down, you get your psych evaluation just to make sure you're not crazy, or just to make sure you get to handle the kind of pressure of what's about to happen. And then if you get that, that's quite a good sign. And then you get the phone call to say you are on the show. We got a couple before just saying, yeah, you might want to start thinking about work and thinking about starting to cancel things, because just in case. So they keep you very informed of where you're at. If you're successful. So yeah, and then obviously you get the call, and then it's just like, okay, cool, go to get all your looks together and all your bits and pieces, which is
can stress. You remember where you were when you got the phone call?
I was having a flat white, and I was having a flat white, and like, because I'm a bit of a bougie foodie, so I like to go to nice little cafes. And there was a cafe I went to. I had like this avocado on toast with some eggs and some other bullshit over it, and then a nice flat white. I took some of the flat white, and next week the phone started buzzing. I was like, oh my god, because I knew they were either going to call or not call. Like over those next couple of days, the phone was ringing. I hear hello. It wasn't RuPaul. It was one of the Jews. Like, hello, Miss Strokes. Congratulations. You're one of the RuPaul's picked you to be one of the top 10. I was like, oh fuck, you're joking. And ironically, I was going over the road to do a sewing lesson at this sewing school, and I was like, okay, great timing. Did that lesson come in handy? Yes, it did actually. Because I did sew something, but maybe I should go into I had a skirt and a jacket, my love. I think people are confused that there was a jacket underneath there. But what's hilarious is I should have maybe gone to a design school as opposed to a sewing school. That might have helped a bit more. So and I think people always forget that I had a full time job. I know people. I'm sure a few of us had the odd full time job, but it's very different when you're trying to put together a bunch of looks and you're just doing a few gigs as opposed to doing 8 nights a week on the West End, and you've literally got, because a West End schedule is actually quite hectic. Like you're in at 6, just say, and on matinee day you're in at 1, and you're there for the whole day. But then that cuts your days in half completely. Yeah. And plus you got to sleep, you got to eat, you got to shower, you got to have sex. Do you know what I mean? You got to do things, you know. And it's stressful. So. I was like trying to do things at work, like painting nails and that kind of stuff at work while I'm trying to do a show, and also trying to get all these things together. And there's so much you got to put together. So it was a very stressful kind of 3 weeks together. And then on top of that, it was all kind of like keeping it secret and making sure the producers were happy and that kind of stuff. So it was a very stressful couple of weeks. So I wish it'd be interesting to see what would happen if I did it again, but because obviously now I'm not in the show. So I kind of had like the freedom to be like, great, I can actually speak to proper designers and go here and make stuff and whatnot and actually have the luxury of that. So yeah, it was a stressful few weeks.
Shooting forward to day one, as you're walking into the workroom, what's going through your head?
Don't fall over. Literally, I was like, don't fall over. Just don't fall over. It's not like I can't walk. I can walk in heels and I feel I'm very comfortable. Like the higher they are, I'm very comfortable. But you know, when you're like, you've got added pressure of cameras and you have to be hilarious and funny and sexy and this, that, the other, and talented. And the one thing you don't want to have on BBC Three is you falling
on your ass.
Do you know what I mean? So that was the first thing. I said, don't fall over. Get to your point. Obviously, you've got points to get to because it's a studio. So the camera will only pick you up from so far. So you need to hit the X or whatever it is. And then say your line. You want to say the line the best you can. So you don't sound like a mong. And luckily, mine was fine. That went viral. That's great, which everyone loved. So yeah, that was literally my first thing. Just don't fall over and say the line right.
And how did you decide on that entrance line?
Oh, I've been saying I would say that for years. Like I always said, from when I first saw Drag Race, and the entrance lines were kind of now a big thing. Because before, like if you look at like seasons 1 through 4 or whatever, no one said anything. They just came in, hi. You know what I mean?
Just so open the door.
Now these entrance lines are now, added pressure, one of the biggest things you've got to do,
first impressions.
So I always said, you know, and I'm a huge EastEnders fan, huge Kat Slater fan as well. She's like my favorite person in that show. And luckily now we're friends, me and Jesse, because I'm obviously working with Shane Ritchie. I've met her through him, and we've become really good mates as well. We've got history because we snogged at the show that I did once. Oh. And, yeah, big story. So Jessie's a really good mate of mine. I remember meeting her, and this was before the auditions happened. And I said to her, listen, if I ever were to get on the show, I'm saying that line. She's like, oh, fuck off, of course not. And then I said, she's like, oh, okay, you said it. But yeah, I mean, I always knew I was going to say that, for sure.
And once you had walked in, you seen Something Wong. Obviously, you had a previous relationship with her. How did you know her before the show?
work
relationship.
I'm very fond of Something Wong, but I don't want to see her penis. So obviously me and some are kind of part of a little, I wouldn't say part of a group, but like, you know, we've got the same kind of mates on the scene. We do the same kind of bars. We all do similar kind of acts as well in terms of doing comedy and songs, pop songs and that kind of stuff. So we all do kind of similar things, and we all kind of did the same drag competition in London, and that's how I met them all as well. So it's almost like competition/mates, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was just great. I was like, oh, I had a feeling that she could get on, but I didn't know if she did. But then, you know, I knew Cheryl. We worked together on a couple of projects. Who else did I know? I knew of DDC. Obviously, everyone knows Bagger. So I knew a lot of them. I think it's just the first person I go to is someone like, oh my God, hello, how are you? plus she's massive. So she's the first one to see because everyone's getting behind her. So you know what I mean? Yeah, she was definitely the first one to go to and stuff. And I think, and it's nice to kind of walk into that room and be like, oh, I know people in here. Because obviously, if I just walked in and I just saw Scaredy and Gothy, I'd be like, great, okay. So me and two twinks, this is great. Nice one.
Once Rue walks down those stairs, obviously it's very surreal. And once you've been introduced and he had said about there being your prize was the WoW Presents TV show, did you always know that was going to be the prize? Or did
No, we don't. Honestly, we know nothing. We're told absolutely nothing. And rightly so. Like, you know, you want those reactions to be genuine. And obviously, being that it's the first UK one, you know, there's always speculation of how much is the prize going to be? What is the prize going to be? You know, that kind of stuff. And I just think if we're told what it is, it ruins the organic reaction that we would have on camera. And that's kind of reality TV in general, isn't it? Like, you need to.
Did you expect a cash prize though, or a bigger prize package than what it was?
Well, knowing that it was BBC, I was like, I'd be very surprised if there's money. If there is, amazing. I wonder how much it would be, because I can't imagine it would be a lot. Maybe like 10 grand, maybe 20 grand, something like that. But knowing that it's BBC, I was like, I don't think it's going to be anything. So I thought the prize was great. I mean, you know, to have your own TV show and work with World of Wonder, because at the end of the day, you know, we've now built up these kind of relationships with this amazing TV company. So, you know, and we've seen it with so many queens from the States. Some of them barely came anywhere, you know, barely came anywhere on their season, yet they're doing shows on YouTube and through episodes. But look at Alyssa Edwards. She literally came, on the first time she left, when did she place? Seventh?
I think she was sixth, something like that. Something like that.
Do you know what I mean? So it's like, and she's
it's the same with Trixie.
Same with Trixie,
you look at her, and she was like third or fourth out, and...
Exactly. So I think it goes to show that if you're working hard and putting the work in outside, and I always say this, it's not what you do on the show, it's what you do afterwards. I left the show third, yet I think I've done so much, and there's got so much already in the pipeline still from leaving, and I left third. Do you know what I mean? But it's kind of a testament to how people connect with you on the show, but also what you're doing afterwards. If you're not doing anything after the show, you're not going to do anything from there. Do you know what I mean? I think having a TV show and to work with them on your own kind of creative project, I think is really exciting. So I personally was like, this is great. I would love to win this prize for sure.
And then flashing forward to your first runway, obviously. Your original outfit you weren't allowed to wear, isn't that correct?
Yeah. So basically, it was a branding thing. I didn't realise that the Victoria Line board was a brand. I was like, oh actually, I suppose if you think about it, it is a bit of a brand, isn't it? So basically said, have you got any other options? And I legit had no other options. I had brought that cat suit with me. So I was like, I'll just pack a few extra bits, because that wasn't even on my list of things to wear for the show.
Yeah.
So I thought, oh, I'll bring this anyway because it's sparkly and it's a catsuit and it looks camp. I thought, Joe, I'll bring this just in case there's like a challenge or something that I just need to wear something for, I'll just to whack it on. And thank God I did, because I was like, okay, cool. I've got this catsuit. Let's just try and pull a story and a look out of my ass, which was basically a starry night over the Thames, which for me, you know, as someone who lives in London and walks over that, over the bridges, the South Bank Bridge and that kind of stuff, you know, it is gorgeous. Like, to see all the lights and the stars on the Thames is gorgeous. So I was like, okay, I have to go something. Let's just do this. So I fully was like painting in my hotel room, stressed. Yeah, I think I pulled something out of my ass, which was feasible, obviously, if I had had more time, had a sewing machine, because I had nothing to work with apart from a couple of paintbrushes. So if I had some bits and pieces to work with, I think I could have pulled out something else. But you go with what you got, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go with what you got. And I always say that it's, you know, I actually am quite glad that I didn't get to wear the TFL outfit because, you know, I like you just now, I get questioned about it every single day, week, whatever, about the outfit. Why can't you do that? So it's still on people's minds. People love it. And I always think if I had worn the outfit, I would have been safe as opposed to in the bottom two. And I think I had a brilliant, like, first. I think I killed that first ever lipstick. Obviously, I won it.
Yeah.
So, do you know what I mean? So I think actually, you know, just for kind of having a TV moment, I had a great TV moment. So, yeah.
You were the first UK Drag Race lip sync winner.
First ever RuPaul's Drag Race UK winner of the lip sync. Now that's great. That's great. And I never lips I do literally do not lip sync in my shows. Neither does Goffy. But you know, I legit never lip sync. So to win something like that, I'm like, great, nice one. And I'm glad that my kind of turban into a shit wig trick one that literally saved the day, thank god.
And some glitter, don't forget the glitter.
And some glitter, which I was fuming about because I was like, I need confetti, and I was gonna pack a whole bunch of like, confetti cannons into my bag. I just forgot to pack them, so I wanted like a full like confetti moment to come out. But hey ho, you know, it's all good.
And did you have the wigs underneath each other on your initial runway, or was it done after?
No, because I didn't. Because I don't think you think you're going to be in the bottom two. Because I was like, even if it turns out it is shy, it's not that shy, is it? And I'm looking around, going, "Well, I don't know what the fuck she's wearing or she's wearing." But I think I'm cool. I think I'll be at least, you know, bottom three to safe. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know. But Cheryl took the bottom three moment every week, so yeah. So I kind of was like, I don't think I'm gonna be in the bottom two until we got the comments. I'm like, oh, got the comments. Shit. There, so I think I'm definitely in the bottom two there.
And obviously falling into the bottom, not a bit upset. Did you feel kind of disappointed in yourself in any way, or was it just kind of going through your head saying, I'm here,
no,
I have to deal with what I've got?
Yeah, I mean, not disappointed in myself, because I think under the circumstances, I pulled out a couple of bits that were fine. I was very proud that I could even pull out that Thames out bit, because I was like, fuck, like I'm, you know, this isn't my bag. Do you know what I mean? I'm just trying to pull out something out my ass. I'm like, I just want to go in and show and you know, kind of go in with a really, really good head start in a way.
Yeah.
What the TFL dress would have done. But I just kind of was like, do you know what? I am proud of what I've done. I'm very proud of what I've presented. I'm just more annoyed that I'm potentially going home, and you work so hard to get, like, I said, isn't it? Like you work so hard just to get anywhere. Do you know what I mean? This is a hard business. Hard. And I've had, you know, and I've experienced all the no's in the world from being an actor. So something that you feel you're good at and people kind of respect you for and that kind of stuff, you just work so hard to get somewhere with what you do, that you don't want to throw it away. You'd be like, I'm the first one out. Do you know what I mean? It's just, I was like, no, I'm not here to be the first one out. And I was confident I was going to stay, because Gothy saying, oh, I don't perform. I'm like, okay, cool. Well, you're gone. See you later. Don't, I'm sorry, but you've got to perform. You need to.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'm confident that I could stay, but I had to make sure that I do enough and I'm committed to it enough to stay. You don't want a double elimination moment. You want to be the one who stays. And yeah, so that was like fighting. That was a fight. Sorry, Gothy. Look, Gothy is very Gothy has got it good. She's young, she's thin, she's hung, she's got a great life ahead of her. I was not going. So for me, I was like, sorry, doll, bye, see you later.
See ya.
You're very nice. But Gothy's like, I love Gothy. She's one of my best mates. I love her. She's amazing.
Are you all, obviously all the cast, are you still pretty close? Do you still talk a lot? Or
yeah.
Is there...
I mean, we've got our WhatsApp group, and we all kind of like chime in and that kind of stuff. But obviously, we don't see like each other all the time because everyone's in different places and everyone's always busy. Scaredy literally has left the group. Like she's still on the group. Her number's still there, but she doesn't talk. It's like, hi, and then she's like, radio silence.
Silent.
But Scaredy, again, is one of my favourite queens up there. I love her. She's every time I see her, I'm always like, oh my God, I just like you. Because she's just so like, she and her girlfriend, Pussy, they remind me of like the drag version of John Lennon and Yoko Ono. They're just in the corners of a ciggy on the go, just like, ah. Do you know what I mean?
And I love it. Smoking away.
Yeah, I don't think they even smoke, but I love it. I just love it. So, yeah. Scaredy literally has left the group. She doesn't mean talk. But no, we all keep in touch. We're all very kind of supportive of what people are doing. It's just a nice, obviously this kind of thing is like, we are 10 people who have experienced this as a whole. I mean, no matter if you get there, go first week or you win it, you know, we all have this kind of shared experience together. And it's cool. It's just really intense and really interesting. Obviously, some are closer than others. I'm really close with like Crystal and Gothy, and you know, other people are close to others. You know what I mean? It's, you know, it's just kind of, you know, whoever you kind of click with and carry on clicking with, really.
So once you got into, obviously, the next day of the show, you had the top and bottom challenge where the Vivian had to put you guys from top to bottom, who she thought was your toughest competition, and she put you at the top. So was that kind of a confidence boost after being in the bottom two? Did it kind of give you
I was like, well, all right, fine, I'll stand at the top, that's all good. I will stand at the top with you, my love. I mean, clever girl.
Yeah.
You know, because I think a lot of people, like Cheryl, were thinking that she was going to be on top.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't, so.
I think there was a couple of the queens that had that mindset that they were, or not that they would be, but they should be at the top.
Yeah, the entitlement for some of them were real. Like, the entitlement was real for some of them. It's like, hold on, darling. One, we don't know what this next challenge is going to be. And actually, you know, are you worthy to be at the top of this part of the game? Just, have you shown enough to be at the top? Because, you know, with some of them, I was like, you didn't show it. Like, I know I didn't show it, but I definitely showed it in the lip sync. You didn't show it on the runway. You just kind of showed a very bog standard thing. Like you took the brief and just kind of did the brief as opposed to doing the brief. Do you know what I mean?
I think when me stepped into Vivian's head, looking at people's resumes, yours would jump out, obviously, for being on the West End and thinking, there's always an acting challenge in RuPaul's Drag Race. So taking that into consideration and looking at everyone's past, it was smart to put you at the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So going into that acting challenge, obviously everyone knew that you were on the West End. Did you feel that everyone had high expectations for your performance in that challenge?
Probably. I mean, this is the thing. I think any kind of challenge where you stick out as a sore thumb, as you've got experience, like if it's a dance challenge or a sewing challenge, if you say, I'm an actor, I'm a dancer, I'm a seamstress, and that challenge comes up, you're automatically going to be all eyes on you for that. And I was really, and I wasn't fazed by it at all. I was like, great, this is what I do. You know, I'm probably the only one who's probably worked for the script fully and been able to read the subtext of it. And I did kind of become, and they didn't really show this on the show, but I did become kind of, even though the Viv was the leader of the group and directing it, I definitely was like the assistant director. I was literally coaching some through that whole challenge. That's it. The whole challenge. I was literally like, Sam, this is what So certain jokes, I was like, say it like this because this is what the joke means.
Yeah.
I didn't say it like that. But do you know what I mean? So I definitely helped Viv kind of pull it through. And bless Viv, I mean, I was really grateful that, again, they didn't show this in spate on the show. But, you know, she said, you know, we were literally pulled through by vinegar. She really helped people together. So I was like, that's really nice way to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I do wish that I kind of let go a bit more as well. Again, you add the pressure of, even though it's something I do, you add the pressure of cameras and being directed by Michelle Visage and blah, 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 blah. So I do wish that I kind of let go a bit more in that. But, you know, I did the best with that part, I thought. And the part was a great part as well. And I think I really pulled out as much as I could from that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Becky the Maid was definitely written to be
the kind of star role
in that. So, yeah. And to be fair, like, I was just happy, I think, at that point, because obviously I was in the bottom the week before. My mentality was, just be safe for this next one. Let's just be safe so I can go to the next round. God, at least. But, you know, I was just happy just going to help my kind of team get through and, you know, just have a good time with it in the day and just get a really good scene out of it.
When you were filming that, did you realize how iconic that much better line would actually become?
This is the thing. So that kind of part, because they don't really show it, but Bagger was kind of fucking up as much as, you know how Blue was fucking up a lot?
Yes.
Bagger was fucking up a bit more than that, do you know what I mean? But we don't see that. But do you know what I mean? It's, when we were going through it, because we got to a point where Bagger and Sam were taking so long over their scene together that me and Bib had an extra scene that we didn't get to do. So we were like, fuck, are we now going to be penalised for not doing that last scene? Luckily we weren't. And it all kind of made sense, you know, as they showed it all. I think when Michelle was telling Bagger, much better, much better. And then obviously Bagger was doing her thing with it. I was like, okay, cool. That's a line that might stand out purely because Michelle has been saying, say it like this. So, but I don't think we ever knew it was going to be as big as it is. But then, you know, I think Bagger knew because after that, she would not stop saying it. So I think Bagger knew that much better was going to be her thing. So same way that I knew that Bring It to the Touch Pop was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
I knew it. So, yeah. So sometimes you just know when these things are going to be a thing.
You take your moment and run with it.
You have to.
And then obviously you've had the Bond villain challenge for your runway. How did you come up with your concept for Mrs. F Tits?
I loved my outfit. Everyone was like, "You outfit shit." I'm like, "Excuse me, I really enjoyed my outfit, thank you." I wanted just a fierce bitch CEO of a company, very much like The Simpsons. The episode of The Simpsons where Homer moves the family to this other town, and this man runs this kind of like office space, it's kind of like a warehousey thing. It's set in a volcano. And I was like, I want that. I want like a volcanic business bitch. You know, and Mrs. F Tits, Mrs. Thunder My Tits. She ran. What was it called? It was called Tits, the Tottenham Institute of Terrorist Stylings. Apparently there's now a volcano in Tottenham, North London. You know, she works there, she runs the whole town, she has sex with all the employees, you know, and all the people who come in, and she's just fucking hot. So I love my outfit personally. I just wanted a very sexualized bitch.
So once she's got called safe and you got back into the workroom, you and Something Wong were discussing Cheryl, and you had mentioned obviously you knew her previously and you just didn't feel like you knew her in the competition as she wouldn't be in
because she was faking her way through the competition, and I say that with no regret, very Kim Woodburn. but it's true, like, you know, okay, so you've got to remember, I am a woman of a certain age in my 30-something year of life. I feel like I've seen it all and met a lot of these types of people who feel like they have to act as... I even did it when I was in my 20s. Like, you come out, you want to impress people, and you, especially in performing arts, you want to impress, you want to be the one who stands out. So you put on this kind of persona so people can like you in a way, and you see right through it. People see right through it. And I was watching her in the workroom when the cameras were open on, and I was like, who is this person? Like, this, even this accent is not sounding like the person I've met before. And it just felt like I was seeing her do like kind of like a Gemma Collins, "Oh, I'm from Essex" kind of thing. And my whole thing was, it wasn't to be shady. It was more just be like, just be you. Like, you're enough. You're literally enough. Just be you. But again, like, when you're in this environment and you're on the biggest show of your life, I'm sure the show has been like, I need to be on this show. Do you know what I mean? It's the biggest show of your life, it's the biggest opportunity of your life. You can't hear that. You can only hear what's in your own head and what you think people want to see. So for me, I was like, you're a bit fake. You're faking your way through this competition at the moment for me. And it would just be nice to see a more of a real side to you. Because how are people meant to connect with you if you're just putting on this mask and this persona? So obviously, for the runway and for the challenges, of course, turn it up. But when you're just having a general conversation with someone, I'm like, who the fuck am I talking to? So yeah, called her out, and rightly so. You know, and I like Cheryl a lot, and you know, I think she's a really good entertainer. But you know, also I want to know the boy behind the creature we create. Do you know what I mean? So yeah,
I think once you throw a camera in front of a drag queen, you don't know how someone's going to react. They're going to react in a way, but
yeah. I mean,
it kind of each to their own.
It can go either way. Do you know what I mean? But I think for me, maybe I'm just an old fart who has seen it all before, and probably been that as well at some point, and had to learn my own lesson from that, and just be like, actually, just being you and just in the moment is so much more rewarding, and not just for the person you're talking to, but for you as well. Like, you get to feel that moment, and you remember it a certain way, as opposed to going, well, actually, I was like this. Well, no, actually, you were like this, and it was.
Your next episode was your design challenge,
which I'm going to self-proclaim as the best episode of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. Just putting that out there.
And obviously that was the birth of Hodgepodge.
The birth of Hodgepodge, RuPaul's vagina, just literally shout out some confetti, and there was Hodgepodge. Boom.
Once they had kind of introduced that challenge, and RuPaul had said, look, this is a car full of crap, and make an outfit out of it, what was going through your head? Like, did you see something in that car immediately and went, I need that? Or was it just kind of a grab and go situation?
First thing was, legit, I wonder what the lip sync is this week. I wonder what the lip sync is. I should probably start learning it. Because obviously we don't know until the day. Not the day of the lip sync, but the day before when they give us a challenge, what the lip sync will be. So we've got a couple of days to learn it. But I was like, I wonder what the lip sync is, because I'm probably going to be really, really shit at this. Like, really shit. So, and obviously I just had a whole challenge where I had to make a Thames outfit a couple of days before. So already I was like, I've already done this. I feel like I've done this already. Jesus Christ. So I ended up just thinking, I don't know what I want. I don't know what to get. I don't know.
So once you had, obviously, everyone had ran. There was no drag queens in that room that day. There was just men grabbing stuff. Once you had got all your stuff to your workstation and looked at it all, did a kind of a concept come into your head, or was it grab everything and start putting things on a mannequin to see what worked? Because obviously you did change your concept a few times.
Five times, yeah.
Yeah. What was your initial concept originally? Did you have a...
So I think I saw the blue bin liners. I went, oh, they're shiny. I thought, let me just get something that's shiny. That's always a good thing to start with. You know, if it's drag, just make it shiny. It's fine. and it's weird because you don't see... Because I don't know how Viv saw the videotapes, but I did not spot them at all. So I saw these bin liners. I went, okay, that's quite cool. And I had a blue wig from the TFL outfit. I was like, I could just wear my blue wig with that. Somehow that looks sick. So I got a whole bunch of those. And then when I started trying to sew with it, I remember this vividly. But this is just a private memory. I was like, oh, fuck. So I went to set up the sewing machine. Bear in mind, I do know how to set up a sewing machine. I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, I just forgot that step. You know, like on Bake Off, like that person goes, oh, I forgot the eggs.
Yes.
And it's already in the oven. Like, but they've made that recipe 100 times, but I forgot the eggs. It was literally like that. Like I was like, oh, God, I forgot to loop something around here. Great. But by that point, I'd already been like, okay, this is not going to work. What else is there? So I literally had got myself into this routine of going trial, error, something else. Trial, error, something else. And then like the whole toothbrush thing, which I wish I did now because that would have been sick, I reckon.
Yeah.
Kind of was working and then that kind of failed and then so it was a lot of like trial and lots of error and I was like, let's just do paper.
And so I was gonna ask, did what made you sell on the paper? Was it just kind of a last resort, get it on, get it made?
Lack of time, last resort. I literally was like, I don't know what else to do. Just literally that. And I thought, okay, just go with that and see what happens. So I just kind of got very, very improv with it. I was like, let's just create some shapes of a shoulder. Wow, War of the Worlds. Yeah, sure. Some red spray paint, which was actually like orange. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. So yeah, I think I'd kind of just given up on that point of like, let's just do the bottom two moment and just do that. But you know, iconically, I think the outfit has now become an iconic piece of memorabilia for Drag Race. and it's now literally the worst outfit of RuPaul's Drag Race. But then, you know, sometimes I look at some of the outfits that some of them wore afterwards. I'm like, do you know what? Maybe my outfit was better than that. Do you know what I mean? so actually, I mean, did you see something Wong's outfit for the next one? Terrible. Yes. Terrible. I was like, mine's much better than that.
There was actually someone online asked me, did you and Something Wong use the same pattern for the jacket? Because it was very similar in terms of
that
shape.
That is hilarious. So I didn't realize this until I actually watched the show. I didn't realize we were in the same outfit. A skirt, a jacket, and some nipple tassels. I had no idea. Literally, I didn't even know on the day that we were in the same outfit. I didn't even click. And then I watched it. I went, we're in the same fucking outfit.
Just different material.
Just different pieces of crap. So yeah, hilarious. So it was so, I'm literally pissed off laughing. I was like, that is so funny. Because I literally did not even notice that she was wearing the same outfit. So it wasn't the same pattern. She's just the same non-talent. Concept,
essentially.
The same non-talent.
And obviously you and Something Wong were in the bottom two of that episode. How did it feel having to lip sync against a friend in that competition?
Well, I was very shocked because I thought it was me and Cheryl. Because Cheryl was giving me fingers. A bin liner with some spirit fingers. And I was like, this is bollocks. Like, how are you wearing that? You just hot glued something to a bin liner. Like, I remember when I was a kid, I used to wear a bin liner for Halloween. A bin liner, a puffer jacket, and a mask, trick or treat. do you know what I mean? And I was like, as if you are wearing that. Now, what's funny is a lot of the outfits in person look absolutely sick. I mean, Vivian's looked so gorgeous in person, but on TV, I was like, oh, it looks a bit shit, actually. Not shit, but it doesn't look as it did in person.
Yeah.
I think because she was black. She was more black than me. She was black up under her chins, all the way down. And it just looked like, okay, cool. Cheryl's in her hand looked like a mess in person. On TV, I was like, oh, not that bad, actually. Not that bad. So I was sure it was going to be me and Cheryl. I was ready to go home then because I was like, great, it's going to be a lip sync. Sorry, it's going to be a death drop. And then I'll be like, okay, bye, see ya. Because everyone loves a desk job, apparently. Yeah. And then when it was some, I was like, part of me was like, oh my God, as if. Like, it was, to that point, I was more just having fun with it. I wasn't stressed about the show. I was having, I'm here for a laugh now, it's great. So I was like, oh my God, I'm looking at some, that's hilarious. But also I was like, I could have a chance to stay then, really, because she's not going to do a death drop. She'll just do something crazy, I'm sure. But as long as I'm having a good old time, having fun with this, I could potentially stay.
So, obviously, you lost the lip sync. And that moment when RuPaul is telling you that you're going home, what is going through your head? Like, are you upset? Are you angry that you're the one going home?
Well, not angry, because I already had like put on myself that I was going anyway. Gutted, because I really would do Snatch Game. Like, Snatch Game is like the dream for me to do.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day the drag gods will be like, winning a stroke, she's coming back to do
bring her back
something. And then you'll do Snatch Game and I'll fucking smash it, because I was so excited. Because the thing is, I looked at it, I was like, actually, if I had stayed, I would have then smashed Snatch Game. I would have smashed the next one and the next one. Like, there were three performances that I would have been like, yeah, I could have done that, could have done that, could have done that. I know I would have done really well in all those. So hopefully one day they'll be like, Vinegar, you're coming back to do something. I'm like, great, thank you. just more gutted that I didn't get a chance to do the ones that I really wanted to do. But also relieved that I was leaving. I was like, oh God. You don't realise it is a massive, massive stress. And I was like, I just want to sleep. Like, because you don't sleep really that well. Late, it's long days. And you kind of feel a bit out of sorts. I actually think if I was to go back and do, say, an All-Stars, something like that, which everyone keeps asking, I'm like, I don't know anything. I think I would literally have a whole new reboot mindset, because I would, not that I know how it works, because it's different every time and there's always surprises, but I think I would know how I would work in that situation again, how I would prepare for it differently, and how I would kind of, work my way towards it in a way.
Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say that out of all the challenges that you didn't get to do, Snatch Game would have been the one that you would want to do most?
Snatch Game for sure being the one I want to do the most. The girl band would have been wicked as well. The water one as well would have been wicked as well. My water bottle advert would have been absolutely amazing as well.
You were planning on being Sandra from Gogglebox for Snatch Game.
Sandra from Gogglebox. It would have been sick. I've met her loads of times now. She's like, Vinegar, I want to see you do me, yeah? And I was like, Sandra, I will do you. I promise. So I did like a whole bunch of videos and stuff on Instagram, because she was like, I want to see you do me, yeah? And I was like, great, I will do you. But she's so amazing. And I wanted to put some sort of like, working class representation on the show, I think I did it with myself anyway. And then to do it with Snatch Game would have been absolutely sick. So maybe another time, who knows?
When you come off the show, it takes a while for the show to finish filming, editing, and then to be released. How long did you wait for the show to be actually announced?
So we got announced in August. Obviously, we had finished filming, say, like early April. So I went straight back to Jamie. Some people were pissed off with me that I'd gone for a couple of weeks and not told them anything. So I walked back into this room. I was like, I just want to come back to work and have a good old time. But I felt very like I was not happy at all. I came back quite down, and not down about being eliminated really or whatever. I was just more down that it was just kind of like I had this massive weight on my shoulders of this secret and you can't say anything. And you feel like people are talking about you, going, oh, you fucking bastard, you've lied, and that kind of stuff. And I had that at work from a couple of people. So it was very difficult actually coming back and trying to, get into the swing of real life again. because you know, you've just experienced this massive thing that you've mm-hmm. worked, that you've worked so hard for, you spent so much money on as well, and it's like, oh my god, like, how do you find yourself back in the real world when you're trying to go back to work and that kind of stuff, and you all, you know, people are like, oh, you know, you've taken the piss. It's like, I haven't taken the piss, but you can't talk about the fact that you've gone through the right channels of it and that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
it was a tough few months.
And once the show was actually announced and the kind of the Meet the Queens was released, how did you feel the reaction was towards you personally?
Oh my god. I would say it was like 90% amazing, but there was 10% of trolls who looked at a picture going, she's shit, the wig shit, the makeup shit, the outfit shit. I'm like, it's just a picture. And we didn't know, and it was funny enough, we didn't know that that was our Meet the Queens either. We got called in. So we got called in, they said, oh, just wear one of your outfits from the show, which is like your I think it was like the extravaganza, because that was meant to be my extravaganza, actually, for when I was like, I'm winning this for the last week. And thank God, actually. So I was like, okay, cool. We're wearing this. Great. But we weren't told that it was our Meet the Queen. So obviously, okay, if we were told, things would be completely different. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So we went in, did the interview and that kind of stuff. Then they were like, great, Meet the Queens. Here's all the photos. We were like, oh my God, what? So I think a few of us were a bit like, I didn't want that outfit to be the Meet the Queen, but okay. Mm-hmm. But for me, just in terms of the video, I think when people got to see the video of me talking and that kind of stuff, that the reaction was amazing. People were, mm-hmm. I think people liked the fact that I just came across really kind of real and just like I was talking just in a real way, as opposed to going, all right, I'm Binnigar Strokes. I've now just done a show home impression. all right, I'm Binnigar Strokes. I'm a slag. I'm this and that. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, you know, we were asked questions and I just answered them, essentially. Mm. I think what really shocked me was just the kind of automatic support from the public as well. Like, people you don't know, people were like, oh my God, I think you're amazing. And it's so good to see a queen of colour on there, and you're going to be representing that kind of stuff. And I was like, okay, this is cool. It's just the odd percentage of people who are like, you're shit, I'm going to troll you, and this kind of stuff. It's yeah. Like, okay, fine, whatever.
Did you find that most of them trolls were, it sounds weird, but American, that didn't fully understand what UK queens usually do for their drag?
I think my trolls that I saw, a couple of them were actually British, there's an Italian guy who tried to come for me as well. Spelling as well. So yeah, it's a mixed bag. What's hilarious is I thought they'd all be like, you know, like kids. They're all like 30-year-old men in their 30s, like gay guys in their 30s. And I'm like, get a life, mate. Are you serious? So and I clap back at a couple of them on Twitter. And we get told in our media training, just leave them to it. Don't clap back. You don't need to. But I was like, I'm angry, so I'm going to clap back. So I clap back at one of them. And thank God, Boy George randomly got involved. And he was like, you tell him, Vinegar, he's a cunt. And I was like, oh my God, Boy George is now tweeting. So I was like, great, I've got, Boy George literally loves me. So yeah, it's funny. I mean, I've only clapped back at a couple of them, but the thing what happens is you clap back and it just literally ends up being a feed. The more people jump in, it's like, I just want to post about, you know, my favorite sandwich today, or I just want to look at porn. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be looking at, you know, all this stuff. So I got to a point where I stopped, like, tweeting myself, like, trying to find myself on Twitter. I just stopped all that. If I needed to post anything, I'm leaving a post in and I'm out. Do you know what I mean? I'm not, like, sticking around and that kind of stuff.
Because I had touched on the same kind of conversation with Dita, obviously being another queen of colour, going through the same situation. To me, what I've taken from the show, and it just seems to be, the queens of color are never held up to the same standard as other queens. When you look at the likes of something silly as Instagram followers, I looked up all of season one, and for some strange reason, you're the only one that is under 100,000 followers, which is so frustrating.
Yeah.
And it was the same with the season 12 girls at the minute. The queens of color are the ones that are fighting to get over 100,000.
Yeah.
And some of them are sitting near close to 200,000-300,000, which is... Yeah. I think it's a conversation that needs to be had. And obviously, you being the only queen of color on the first season, did you feel that you were put at, not a disadvantage, because that's not true, but did you think that the fan base would have held you to a different standard as the rest of them would?
So, okay, so just to touch on that actually, because with my Instagram, for some reason, when people were looking for me, there was something, and I even tried on people's phones, and like you would type in Vinegar Strokes, but I wouldn't come up. So even though I was verified, there was some reason why either my account wasn't coming up, or if I was, it was like 6th, 7th down
yeah,
bottom, whatever. Even though I was verified, that was really weird. So I had to go to BBC to be like, look, the I don't know what's wrong with this algorithm. It could be racist. I don't know, but keep it out. So yeah, so at the moment, I'm just like, the fact that I have got at the moment 85,000 followers, but it keeps me fluctuating at the moment. Some reason, and I'm like struggling just to get to that 100,000. I swear to God, when I get 1,000 followers, I'm baking a cake and I'm going to smash my face in it and be like, "Great, I've got 1,000 followers, thank you." And this is the thing, because I haven't directly experienced any sort of racism or racist language that I've seen. Obviously, I'm sure someone's typed a few words out there, you know, because they're behind the keyboard. So I haven't experienced that firsthand on like social media. And if I had, I would have clapped back that out completely. But I was speaking at DragCon, I was chatting to like Silky and a few other people, and they've all said, you know, it's hard to be a black drag queen on RuPaul's Drag Race. And I really don't know why that is, or what that is actually about. It's hard to answer because I don't know what that's about. For me, I'm just enjoying, yeah, sure, you know, I might have the lowest out of everyone, but I know for a fact that I'm working the most and I'm putting the most content out there. So I'm probably the most, out of all of us, I would say that I'm one of the most visual in terms of I feel like I am always on people's Instagrams, and yeah. I'm always kind of there in some capacity, putting something out for people. I mean, I don't know if you saw my 6 video that
I did. I literally watched it last night.
Yeah,
so good.
Thank you. Yeah, so put that on, and that's obviously done amazing. That's gone viral and that kind of stuff. So you know, I'm putting myself out as the most I think out of everybody. That's it. Because I always feel like you have to. I said before, it's what you do afterwards, which is the most important thing. And I think I'm putting out the most stuff out of everybody, the most content. And I'm happy with my 85,000 so far. And I want it to grow, obviously, because I think I deserve it. And I think actually the more I have, the more opportunities I can create, you know, and not just for me, but for other people to kind of watch and be inspired by, whatever. But yeah, it is frustrating. And I think a lot of people do hold the thing of, if you look a certain way, whether that's your drag's a bit unpolished or whatever, or your personality or whatever, you do kind of have to work a little bit harder. You know, you can't all be bagger and just have everyone go, "Oh my god, I'm bagging too." But you know what I mean? Some people have to fucking work a little bit harder to get there. So yeah, I will get my 100 at some point, then my 200, and then whatever. But I think it will just be take a bit of time to get there. But I do what you mean. It is a bit bullshit that it's,
yeah,
not even, you know, over 100. And it's bullshit that the black queens are kind of held at a certain standard of, you're black, so you probably have to look like RuPaul to be a black drag queen. It's like, absolutely not. Which is why I've kind of gone the other way and gone with my whole kind of housewifey look and that kind of stuff. To go, actually, no, I'm black, but I'm going to do this with my drag. And fuck you if you don't like it. So, yeah.
After the hit show had been announced, obviously Meet the Queens came out, all the fanfare had started in the UK. You all got to go to DragCon in New York. How was that experience? Obviously, you're the first UK cast. I'm sure that everyone was kind of trying to get in and get to know you. And...
so much fun. I mean, that was my first ever drag con as well. Like, I'd never actually been to a drag con before. I'd never been to a drag world. I know drag world was in the UK, but I'd never even been to a drag world before. So I was like, I don't know what to expect. But obviously, I'd seen bits and pieces on like YouTube and that kind of stuff. And it was great. I mean, it was so much fun. You know, we got to take our little looks out with us, and we didn't do much. We just kind of like waved at people. I was like, hi, we signed some pictures and whatnot. And we got to go to New York, and I've got lots of friends and family in New York. So I got to go and see them, and also go and see some shows as well. Like Broadway, I was like, yay. If I'm ever in New York, I'm like, I will see a show every single night. Like, I'm a theater whore. I'm like, go and see everything. So I saw like five shows. Yeah, it's great. So I saw like five shows. Had a great old time. Got drunk every night. Had pizza every night. Had like lots of food. Saw my friend's baby because she's just given birth, and she's like, "Oh my god, are you here? I'm like, I'm here. Show me your baby. Let's go." do you know what I mean? So it was just great. I loved it. And it was great. It was a great kind of like preview into what London Drag Con was going to be like. And like London Drag Con is like nothing compared to the New York one, I think, in terms of the size and the mania and the craziness. You know, it's a beast. But yeah, I had a great time.
How was your first drag con in the UK?
Amazing. I had a queue, which was great. I think if you've not got a queue, Charlie Hyde, you know, it's kind of like, what's going on? You should have stayed at home. So yeah, I had a queue, which was great. Sold lots of stuff, made some good coin, and good. got to meet the fans. Like, it's so funny. Like, for me, you don't know how impactful the show actually is, and just your presence on there. Even though, for me, I was only on there for three episodes, but you don't realize how you impact people's lives, people's days, until you meet them. And through this is why I'm so adamant of being quite active on social media, especially Instagram, and keeping the content coming, whether it be music or cooking shows or the sick stuff we're doing now. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, if you're keeping content out, people want to see it, especially now when no one can go outside and whatnot. It's like people are looking for things to make them smile, make them laugh, make them come out of this kind of shit situation that might be in. So yeah, it's so great to kind of meet the fans and hear from them, and you know, and yeah, great.
And touching on, like you said, their music, you did release a single called Camp.
Well, this is the thing, my love. When you get eliminated from the show, one of two things happens. You either release a single or your nudes get leaked. Gothy Kendall. So I was like, I'm not sure people are ready. Not that they want to. They're ready to see my Frank and Beans. So I was like, do you know what? Let's give them a single instead. First single, Camp. I got shaded by the Vivian on that Gogglebox show the other day with Bagger, and I was like, okay, cool, production values. How was your wedding? But again, like, who cares? Like, you know, another mention, thank you. So Camp was kind of like a thing of, I want to release some music now, and I've always wanted to do music anyway. So yeah, I just kind of worked with a producer. I wrote on it as well, along with a couple of people. We put out this great song. I've got two more songs. But I've recorded one already. I'm just kind of getting that finalised, and obviously try to get a video done for it as well. And then I've got a third one, which I've got the track for, which I'm now writing the lyrics for. So yeah, awesome. It's cool. It's fun. It's a nice one. And again, like, it's not like I'm now going to be like, I'm now a pop star, that kind of stuff. It's just cool content to put out for the fans.
Yeah.
And for me as well. It's stuff that I can then put into my shows and perform live and that kind of stuff.
Would music be something that you would pursue further in terms of, would you ever release an album or an EP further down the line?
Maybe. I mean, that's the thing. It all depends on, because I think drag music from a drag queen is, especially like a Rue girl, obviously it's kind of expected now. If someone sings, I would get an album out. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would release a full body of work, only because I don't know if the fans and the people who listen to music will actually consume an album like I used to when I was a kid. I was younger, I would go to HMV, RIP HMV, I would go get a cassette or get a CD. I'm sure people would be like, what the hell's a CD? Oh my God. But I used to go, and it was a full event for me to buy an album, go home, stick it into my dusty CD player, blow the dust out of it and listen to it. And I think now people consume music in a different way. And, you know, I look at some drag albums that have come out, and I'm like, unless there's a video for it, if you look on Spotify, the streams just aren't there. So I feel like, single by single, do like a Beyonce, just do a whole bunch of singles and kind of release the video of that and just enjoy it like that. But if a album or EP happens in the future, maybe, but it would have to be under the right conditions and actually would have to make some money from it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And from, obviously, we're kind of in a weird situation at the minute. You can't really plan the future too much because it's not really certain. But do you have any planned gigs for the future or anything the pipeline that you are looking forward to?
Well, in terms of in the diary, because literally everything got cancelled, I was like, great, nice one. I've got a few gigs in August that I'm picking up, kind of like gigs that were, I was meant to, like Katia and Latrice. So I think we're going back out in August, permitting that we can, that the venue is going to be open, so fingers crossed to be open. And then other than that, Panto, I'm doing at Alice in Wonderland at Seven Oaks in Kent, and I'm playing the Wicked Queen of Hearts, which is going to be great. And for now, that's really it. I think it's just at the moment, it's just kind of, you know, we don't know what's happening with gigs and venues and that kind of stuff, and obviously, a drag queen can only work if the venues are open. So, but I've got like some other bits coming up, like online things, and I've got a project I'm doing with Blue and Bagger as well. So there's little bits and pieces here and there, but I'm hoping that some more stuff will come up. But I think 2020 is a year of the cancelled, isn't it? I won't say any more about that.
Hello, everyone. Unfortunately, we had some technical issues with the sound for the rest of the interview, so unfortunately, I wasn't able to use it. So I will get Vinegar back at some point just to re-record the rest of the interview, hopefully. But in the meantime, you can follow her on Instagram at The Only Vinegar Strokes. You can also follow us at Don't F It Up and Kyle Divine Clark on Instagram. And we will see you next week, next Friday, for another episode of Don't Fuck It Up. Bye.